Welcome to Call Us Mommy Podcast, where we get real about mom life, relationships, and careers. I'm Tiana, a single mom of three.
And I'm Marielle, a married mom of four. We're both on a mission to empower you not to settle in any area of life.
All right, now we're ready to hear my favorite person, my life wife, her story. And I love that God had put us together as like not just best friends, but like business partners and to be co-hosts of a podcast, because we have such opposite stories mm-hmm. that we can be, we're able to reach so many different like women that can be like, mm-hmm. oh, I relate to her. Oh, I relate to this. And so I cannot wait for you guys to hear her story.
Mm-hmm. Opposite stories, opposite personalities, opposite skills, everything. It's like a really a perfect match.
It really is. Yeah. All right, so to get started, what did you know about God growing up?
So to kick off that, like, our stories are really different. I grew up with, I was a pastor's kid. That's kind of like the umbrella that I grew up under. My dad was an associate's pastor. He was a pastor. He was an evangelist. He, like, did all the things. He pastored churches for a couple years at a time, and then he would maybe help churches get started and then move on to another one. So I grew up in church, but with a lot of different church experiences. So I had some like sprints of years where I grew up in the same, or I was in the same church and in the same body of church, but then we would have years where we would be like in different places a lot. So God was like in every area of my life. We were in church on Sundays, Sunday mm-hmm. nights, Wednesdays, and then for a long time, every single day, because my mom was the director of the daycare at our church. So I was there literally 24/7.
Lots of church.
Yeah.
So do you feel like as like a little girl that you had a relationship with God, or was it like one of those things like when, you know, our parents know it's like God is real and it's like, oh, he's real. You already know this. And you're living it literally every day of your life, yeah. all day.
Looking back, I think I did. I just didn't at the time know that it was a relationship with God that I had. Definitely I had like a relationship with religion. You know, mm-hmm. you're learning all these things and some of it's being told to you. So it was like, I just chose to believe it. I always had questions. I never really accepted things that I was being told. And my dad, being a pastor, went to a Bible college. Like he studied the Bible and he was very good at when I had questions, like helping me process and understand them versus just being like, well, this is just how it is, Ariel. Like either take it or leave it. So I was very blessed in that way.
So did you have like a choice like to believe what you wanted to believe, or like growing up in a household with obviously mm-hmm. a preacher as a dad, did he tell you, I know you said he wasn't like, well, this is how it is, mm-hmm. believe it. But did he give you the option to maybe like go out and search yourself?
I don't remember specifically being told like, you don't have to believe this. This is what we believe. I do remember like certain conversations where he would say like, well, this is what I believe and this is why. Mm-hmm. So I also don't think I felt like I could be like,
questioning it.
Oh, I don't think I believe in God, you know? And definitely there were times where I questioned it and I felt comfortable having that conversation.
Okay. So what was life like growing up?
Honestly, like I had a really good childhood. I can't complain. I think I've faced a lot of things that a lot of us have faced, you know, like growing up as millennials and the parenting that we experienced or didn't experience. But I think I struggled because I was a only child for like 7 years. And then my brother was born and it was still kind of like being an only child because he was so young. So I never really had siblings. And so I think I was a very lonely kid. Mm-hmm. And then I also went to a private school until seventh grade. And I actually jumped from like one private school to another private school and then to public school. So that's where I think that I always had a relationship with God that I didn't at the time know was a relationship with God mm-hmm. because I had like a lot of like invisible friends. Like I played with myself really well. My mom was always said like, you never really needed to have someone there on the ground playing with you or like with your dolls. Like you could play by yourself really well. Mm-hmm. And I think for like looking back, for me, that person or like the source that I was gaining whatever from, I think that was God. But sometimes as a kid, when I would pray, while in my head I was praying to God, it's kind of like what you were saying in your story. Like I'd be praying, but it was almost like, well, I was told to pray these mm-hmm. things. And so while I know God was listening and I know that he was a part of that conversation, the relationship that I have with him now is very different. And the mm-hmm. relationship that I think that I had with God then was just not exactly what I thought that it was. So I had a good life growing up. Like I don't really have anything to complain about. I think that I just, there was a lot of growth that happened once I think woke up to a lot of things, you know?
Yeah. So what were like your teen years? Like, did you go through like the rebellious stage of like the normal teenagers that they say like, oh, she was wild, yeah, like me?
No, the most rebellious thing I did was like sit on my best friend's roof and drink Red Bull. Like, we didn't do anything. I mean, sure, I did, you know, like I did some things every once in a while that I lied about, like maybe stayed out too late.
Do you feel like God like played a part in that, like of you like staying like without, you know, doing all the rebellious things that like most teenagers are doing?
I don't know. That's a question, because I don't know if it was God or if it was the religion that I grew up in, mm-hmm, and thinking, well, I can't do those things because I want to be a good girl, mm-hmm, or because I think part of me knew it was because I wanted to serve this greater person that I believed had better things in store for me. But I think there was also a big part of it that was out of fear.
Mm-hmm. So where did you think religion played a part in your life? Did you have a lot of fear from it? Like a lot of anxiety from it? Did it create a lot of like, kind of like a warped perception of like how God loves?
Mm-hmm. So I grew up in a non-denominational church, but my parents left a Pentecostal church. So very legalistic, which, didn't play a big part, but it did in a way like create some fear. Because I grew up in a non-denominational church, I think I had a good relationship with God. I think that because of like the other things that interjected sometimes, I would like stay up at night praying like over and over again, like, please let me be saved. If I die tomorrow, like, please let me go to heaven. And I knew that I didn't have to do that. And I think this is all honestly a little bit of OCD. Like I felt, mm-hmm, like I needed to always have like this fresh slate.
Mm-hmm.
But what I didn't realize at the time was like, you wake up every morning and you wake up with a fresh slate. Like God's always cleansing us and sanctifying us. But obviously you don't understand that as like an 8-year-old when you're just like, I just want to make sure I go to heaven with my parents. So I think there was some anxiety that was created around that might have fueled the way that I performed as a teenager. But I also think I just had like probably a better than most relationship with my parents that allowed me to feel safe enough to not act out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was being fulfilled enough, I think, in my relationships with my friends and with sports that I didn't, like, I wasn't looking for anything else.
I love that you said that, because a lot of the things that, especially as a teenager, when you're searching, that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're looking to be fulfilled. And yes, something that you weren't missing was, mm-hmm, you were getting fulfilled with, like, your God and like, yeah, relationships in your life and like your the lifestyle that you had.
Yeah. And I've always been surrounded by people where I enjoyed being at church. I was never, you know, judged. I mean, yeah, there was like, I'm sure toxic parts of it, but I think I was just really lucky. Like if you look at the people in my generation that are like deconstructing their faith now, they're doing it for so many different reasons, mm-hmm, than I am. I mean, they're deconstructing their faith to the point where they reject God because of the church they grew up in. And I was just very, very, I think, very lucky in that sense. Because even family members went through a very similar, you know, experience that I did, and they've come out completely different. So I think you could have the same experience and process it differently, obviously. I mean, obviously, everyone does, yeah, you know.
And I think that's just a good example of, like, we can have the same experience, mm-hmm, and it's what we're going to take out of it.
Right.
Like, where did God play a part in this? How do we actually feel about, mm-hmm, this? Instead of, like, this is miserable, like, yeah, you know.
Right, yeah, and completely rejecting it.
Yeah.
So I think my deconstruction it's felt really safe because I've been able to do it even like with my parents. Like I can, mm-hmm, have those conversations with my parents, and I lean on my dad a lot for understanding scripture and, or even like how to take steps to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I hadn't had a good relationship with God and religion growing up, I wouldn't be able to do that now, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I know that, like, and I see this now, like, I get to, like, witness this myself, like, when you have questions, you get to ask your parents, and your parents are really good at, like, answering it without, like, giving you the, this is how it is, mm-hmm, like, they give you the option of, to actually kind of have your own opinion about it, and I love that about you guys. So when do you feel like you started having, like, a relationship with God and, like, making it your own?
Mm-hmm. I think I've always on some level, and I think a part of that is because, you know, I'm deconstructing my faith now. But my parents, I grew up with them deconstructing their faith because they grew up being indoctrinated, living in this legalistic religion. And then right before I was born, like literally, I think it was like the year before I was born, they left that church. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, it was like essentially like being Amish and leading the Amish. They were shunned for a little bit. And so I grew up with them deconstructing their faith. So I think one, that taught them how to teach me and let me process things. And then also anytime I ask my dad questions, sometimes he's like, you know, I've had the same question. This is what I've studied about it. And so it's been really easy to do that.
I love that.
I think for me, like making my faith my own was not relying so much heavily on asking my dad those questions, or even when he did give me answers. And this is not, you know, his fault at all. It's just me respecting him and like taking in everything he said. I do that now, even with certain pastors that I follow. Mm-hmm. Anything they say, I'm like, oh, I just love that, and I'll eat it up without comparing it to what I get out of scripture.
Yeah.
And so I think I started doing that probably in high school whenever. So, you know, I said earlier that we jumped around like a lot to different churches because my dad was helping churches or preaching at different churches, whatever. When I was in probably middle school is when he became the associate pastor of the church that I consider like my childhood church that I grew up in. And whenever I was in high school, something happened. It's a non-denominational church, so we didn't have like a board to come in and help if things went wrong. And that's one benefit of being a part of a religion is that they have like a structure and processes and things like that in place. And, you know, things happened and I had to, my parents actually gave me the choice. They were like, we would like to see you thrive in a church. You're not going to thrive here right now. We're not thriving, but this is basically like, we have to go down with the ship. This is our church. So we have to see it home. And, I started going to a different church. So for me, that was like the first time I had to carry my faith on my own, not because my parents forced me to, but because the relationship that was there with my church before was not there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's when I really started to, because I was getting, I wouldn't say different teachings, but like the things that were being said, you know, my parents weren't hearing too. So I'd have to go home and, you know, we would talk about it. And I was put in situations where I could make these decisions and explore my faith in ways that they weren't a part of. And so it was my first taste at like growing my own relationship with God and creating my own worldview, I guess.
How old were you then?
I was probably like a freshman, but it was definitely around high school.
Yeah.
And so that's also a time when you're like, you know, just like doing different things and hanging out with different people. And for me, I'm sure it's not like, you know, for you or like probably most girls even. I mean, even in high school, I remember thinking like I'm behind on the curve of like boys, basically. Mm-hmm. Whereas like my best friend had like, you know, 14, I feel like, not really. And I was always like the side character. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's honestly been my whole life.
Were you the girl that they called green?
What do you mean? Oh, yes. I probably didn't know what that meant until high school. But
she's
yes.
Green.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the first boy that I can really remember liking and wanting to like explore a relationship with, and it made it worth like talking to my parents about, which that was a really hard thing. I think that's something my dad really struggled with, as most dads do. I think that made me draw away a little bit more from my parents. So, you know, when you have those relationships strained, you stop doing certain things. Mm-hmm. If you guys have ever watched Inside Out, like whenever the girl like starts getting frustrated with her family, like in her brain, there's like little islands that power up whenever certain things happen. And whenever she was like having a good time with her family, the family island, I think it was called, like would power up. And that like completely broke down at one point during the movie. And I think that's, everybody goes through that on some level. And I think that's something that like caused my little island, you know, to break down, which I think has to happen, you know, to rebuild in an immature way. So, but that, I think that's what prompted my growth on my own and like discovery on my own, and also like keeping secrets like from, you know, my parents. And, you know, a couple different, and I, when I say a couple, I mean like two different boys passed through my life. Both of which I think my parents knew about and like for the most part were okay with. And, you know, but I got a lot, like an earful of why, like I shouldn't be dating at this age and things like that. So with every relationship, I think it got more and more secretive, you know?
Yeah.
And when I was a senior, I met my now husband, which I guess we had already met. I mean, we knew each other since seventh grade, but I was found him incredibly annoying. Like he was just, he was very, you know, like, I think the word popular is so stupid, but he's just very outgoing. So everyone knew him. Everyone was like pretty friends with him and whatever. And he was just annoying to me. I thought he was very obnoxious. And he was, to be honest. But our senior year, we were in a speech class together. And he was also like, he wasn't a bad boy by any means. But because of how obnoxious he was very like, just needed to stop talking sometimes, you know? And so he would get in trouble sometimes. So he was kind of known that way. And I knew that, like, this isn't someone that my parents would approve of. And he wasn't, like, you know, I couldn't be like, oh, he's a part of this youth group and he, you know, whatever.
Like, he didn't, like, check those boxes of, like, what we hope, you know.
Yes. Like, I mean, literally the past two boyfriends that I'd had before that were, like, I could name the church. I could name the family. Worship team that they performed, like, stuff like that. So, yeah, knew it would be a rough, you know, go at the beginning. But I think still my parents were like, well, you know, like, we'll give her what we think, but, like, it's a high school relationship, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Well, I just fell, like, completely head over heels, obviously, for Zared. And I'd like to think, I mean, he will say that he did for me, too. So I think our relationship, you know, being in high school and going through all those changes, like, getting ready to go into adulthood, we were experiencing, like, so many big emotions. And so we did, I mean, we fell in love. And when we went to college, we tried to stay together. It didn't work out.
And you guys went to different colleges, right?
Yeah, so we were on opposite sides of the state. We're still in Indiana, but he was at the very bottom of Indiana. I was, like, not the very top, but pretty much. So we were, like, 4 hours away from each other. So we didn't see each other very much. I went to a private school, so a Christian college. It was still a liberal arts, so it wasn't, like, a Bible college. It's, like, you know, one of those big, like, Bible Belt colleges. And then he went to, like, a state school. And this college I went to, like, you weren't even really supposed to leave the campus, like, the first 6 months, you know. I mean, they can't stop you, but you can't bring your car and things like that. So that was very, very hard for me. And I'm a codependent. So, you know, I found this person I was codependent on. It was really hard to be away from him for those 6 months. And then also wondering, like, what is he doing? You know, all those unhealthy things. So we broke up, you know. And
did you guys have, like, two different college experiences?
Yes. I mean, very much. I mean, I definitely partied a little bit, and that was, I mean, like, literally I could count on one hand, like, how many times, but I did, and it was stupid. He did, you know, that was something he signed up for college for,
right?
You know? So yeah, very different. And, you know, I would party, but then I would, like, go to the revival, like, things that we did and, like,
yeah,
you know, meet Jesus and in those ways. So you know, I was very much still in that world, if not even more so. Mm-hmm. And learning, too, because, like, yes, it was a liberal arts college, but because it was Christian, they had, like, a core credits that you had to take that were Bible-based. So, like, they were about the Bible. So I was also learning a lot more than I ever had about Scripture and God and all that. So just, you know, a growth of all, like, all ends. And we got back together. And so, like, we talked a little bit about story arcs in your testimony. And that's one thing I always struggled with when telling my testimony, because growing up in church, that was something you did anytime you went to church camp, anything, like, you always told your testimony. And I started dreading it every time. I loved church camp. It was, like, my favorite, even though I would always get so homesick, but I loved it. But anytime we did testimonies, I would dread it because I was like, I don't really have a testimony to share. Like, grew up in church, I'm a Christian, here I am. You know, like, I didn't have anything, like, impactful, you know, like, I don't know. As a kid, especially, you want to entertain, you know?
Right.
And I think as, you know, a person, as a preacher's kid, so, like, everyone's always looking at you to be a good girl. And then being in church, I also always wanted to perform and be, like, this, you know, good Christian. Mm-hmm. And so I think I just really struggled with trying to create a picture of, like, what God has done in my life. And it wasn't even that. While whatever God has done in your life is more powerful than anything that you could make up or create or try to work together. And so even, like, telling my story now, like, when we first, like, when someone asked, I'd like to hear your and Tiana's testimonies, I was like, oh, like, we'll do Tiana's, but we don't need to do mine. Or anytime we do anything, like, I feel like your questions or your answers would always be more interesting than mine. I've just always struggled with that. And again, like, that side character syndrome is something I still struggle with. So
did you share your testimony, like, when you were younger? Like, were you part of, like, that where you think, okay, I'll share my testimony?
Yeah, and I always would start it off with, I don't have very impressive testimony. Like, nothing really crazy has happened to me.
But I think that your testimony is so impressive because most of – and maybe I don't have the stats right, but if we actually looked at them, majority of, like, high schoolers, like, girls and boys, mm-hmm. they followed the trap of like partying and like being like really almost sexually like active, multiple partners, yeah. like really rebellious as a teenager. And for me, like, I think it would have been harder to like actually walk this like straight and narrow where I was content with myself, where mm-hmm. I didn't chase those things. So yeah. I think that it is like, that's a lot of power just to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of self-control.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much of it was ran again by fear, but it, you know, it worked. I think that it was God's way of protecting me. And we talked about that too in your mm-hmm. story, how when I look back at my story, you know, even though it doesn't sound like I made dumb decisions, even like the ones that I can count on one hand or whatever, like they're really powerful dumb decisions that could have ruined my mm-hmm. life. And I did not have the strength, I don't think, to on my own, like you have, like pull myself up from my bootstraps, because you were born having to do that. You've always had to do that. I was born in a privileged life. You know, I mean, we were middle class, but I loved my life and I was yeah. safe and we could put food on the table. There was never any question like that. So I never had to experience a time where I had to pull myself up from my bootstraps. So I definitely feel like God protected me in so many ways in certain decisions that I made. Like, Zaire and I got pregnant in college, mm-hmm. and that was probably the most, like, I mean, my life is over, you know. I would have been 20. Yeah, because I turned 21 while I was pregnant with Baden. And I was a junior in college, so I was like, you know, I'm spending, I mean, $100,000 to be at this school. So it was, like, still a huge amount of student loans I took on to be there and that my parents had to co-sign for. So I was like, this sucks, you know, like, where's my life going to go from here? I planned on joining the Peace Corps after I graduated. So you can't, I don't think you can do that, you know, when you're pregnant. Yeah. And so everything just like went up into question. It was probably the first time that my life was like, well, where do I go now? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. You know, I'd always had like a plan or something I could lean back on. Like, there was just always, I knew what God's plan was for me.
So how was that okay at that college? Because weren't there like certain rules you had to like abide by?
Oh yeah, you had to sign a contract I remember as a freshman, like in our dorm, we did like a fun, you know, like welcoming thing. And then at the very end of it, it was like so weird. They got like physical contracts. I'm sure they weren't like super legal. And you signed it and it said you couldn't have sex, premarital sex. You couldn't do drugs, drink, dance, which the dancing thing was like a giant joke because everyone knew it wasn't biblical to say you couldn't dance, but it was just, you know, colleges are ran mm-hmm. by funding. And so there were certain, I'm sure, legalistic people on the board that were like, we don't want them dancing, you know?
That's crazy.
But yeah, there's a whole, you know, all of them I broke pretty much. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. And so I had to go to the dean and be like, first of all, like, I would like to finish school. I'm pregnant. So I've, you know, broken this contract. But I would like to finish school. You know, I spent a lot of money to be here. But like, they had every right to kick me out. I mean, in their eyes, based on what their rules were.
Right.
He was very gracious. I mean, more gracious than I was expecting. And just, I mean, handled it with total, total grace. And so did all the professors that I would have had the following year that needed to know. I emailed all of them beforehand. And actually my advisor, I had a really good relationship with her. I think she was probably the fourth person to know. I called, you know, my best friend at the time because I couldn't control Zaire. So Zaire was the first person. Called her, told her, because I just need to tell someone. I was with someone right before I took the test, and I said, will you take me to go get another one, basically, just like make sure.
Keep trying. Like, is this still correct?
Yeah. So other than Zaire, I had two friends that knew, and then I told my advisor, because I was like, I don't know how to handle telling my parents, and I'm really scared.
Mm-hmm. So why were you so scared to tell your parents? Because, like, to me, I'm looking like, she's 20. Like, mm-hmm. she's a grown adult. Yeah. Like, why were you so scared to tell your parents? Like, was it because of religion? Was it because you didn't, of the just the disappointment yeah. that we feel like, you know, when we disappoint our parents?
Yeah. And again, I think it's like what we said before, everyone experiences the same situation and same experiences differently. So I think a lot of people could be like, well, it sounds like her parents were really strict and like actually made her feel, you know, fearful or whatever. And yeah, I think my parents were strict, but they honestly, I've known kids that had much stricter parents. It wasn't like an abusive strict or anything.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, my parents had expectations for me and I knew them, and probably a lot of them I put on myself too, but
I could see that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, my parents just had, they wanted so much better for me than they experienced. And I think a lot of that was because of what, you know, the mentality they grew up in. And so they had to fight to get out of that. I think because of that, that projected a lot of like expectations on me. And I just didn't want to disappoint them. I didn't want to let them down, honestly, I think is the main thing.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Yeah. And so I think I was just fearful of like the, what was going to happen and how they were going to respond and just what
life. How did they respond? Like.
So my advisor actually drove me down, and I remember we pulled off at a gas station. Every single time I pass this gas station off 37, like I think of this scenario, so I try not to look at it because it makes me physically ill. But we pulled off of it, and she had to like rehearse telling them, which I'm glad she did, because like even now, like, you know, I just ramble and I work around the point. And so she had me practice it, and every time she would be like, okay, like cut it, you get straight to the point. Mm-hmm. You don't give all that beforehand. They don't care. Yeah. And she had called them ahead of time and told them like to kind of, not that I was pregnant, but that she was coming with me and that.
You had something. She had.
That's something to tell. Okay. So my parents, if I would have known she'd done that, I would have been like, you shouldn't have done that. So I get there. So they know that I'm coming. They're expecting it. I'm like shaking. I tell them, and I just remember like saying it and then throwing myself onto the couch and bawling. And so I don't really know what their initial reactions were. You know, they were frustrated. They were disappointed. They were sad, just crying. Not a lot of like, I don't think yelling. I honestly don't remember a lot from like that night. I just remember it being very hard to process. So I can hear them like talking, and that's like, I think the other thing, like growing up, I would always hear them processing what I would tell them. Like we had a smaller house. Like I would hear it all. And I just felt so responsible for other people's emotions, but like things we do are going to affect other people, whether what you did is wrong or not, like people are going to be affected by that. And so yeah. I would always take it as like, it's my responsibility to make everybody else feel happy, joy, whatever. And if they weren't, it's my fault in some way. So it was fine. The next morning, weird, just very weird. I remember, I don't know why we chose to do this, but my mom was like, let's go shopping. And so we went and did that. I don't know how. I don't know why. I mean, I have a couple pictures of us in the dressing room. I'm like, how do we look like we haven't been crying all night? You know what I mean? And I don't know if it was a sense of like trying to keep normalcy or trying to like, I don't know. We talked about it a little bit. My mom asked how I was feeling. Like, I remember her wanting to like feel my stomach and like see like, you know, just like interested thing. Like she just found out like, okay, you're pregnant. I'm going to be a grandma, like all these things. And so I think she's processing it too. My mom's a very internal person. And she, like, I don't remember her reacting like angrily. I know that she was, but so that was just, it was a weird, weird day. And it took a few weeks for everybody to get on the same page. And so that was hard going through that and like having to hear people process things out loud and then not resent them for it later, you know? So it ended up being fine, you know, like obviously. And they ended up being literally the most supportive parents that they could possibly be. It was just a rough, you know, rough start. But like also I made a mistake and caused that, you know? So it was hard to like process and not take the blame for it, but also be like, okay, but you're also making the decision. So it is your life and like,
yeah.
Give myself the ability to forgive myself and expect other people to as well if they wanted to be in my life. But at the time, it was really hard. But then going through that, like having to – so like that was the end of my junior year. So I really had like I think 2 weeks left of school, thank God. I don't think I ate for 2 weeks. Whenever I weighed at my first like doctor's appointment for the baby, I was the smallest I'd ever been. So, you know, great start. And then had a really great summer. You know, we did stuff as a family more than we ever had. They like opened up to Zared and tried to, accept him more because they were like, well, we're kind of stuck with them.
We're stuck.
And they didn't realize that we had a relationship basically this whole time. I mean, they kind of did, but like, obviously they at first thought it was just like, oh, this was an accident, but this was like, you know,
what? Like random.
Yeah.
Or something random.
Basically. And I was like, you know, we love each other and we plan on getting married. Just didn't expect it to happen this soon, you know? So that they had to process all of that. And so that summer was really good for all that. It was just a very like healing, I think, summer. And then going back to school was like really, really hard because I was leaving my family who were like my support during that. And then obviously Zared, because he had to go back to school too. Mm-hmm. And so not only were we leaving each other in the sense that he was like leaving where our home was, which was only 2 hours away, but he had to go all the way back to Evansville, which was 4 hours. So it was just hard. And I was showing by then, everybody knew like, oh, she's the pregnant girl at Taylor.
I think that tells a lot right there though, of like what type of college you were at.
Yeah.
To remember that, because like you said, yeah, like my mom was pregnant in eighth grade.
Right.
I mean, no one cared, you know. Yeah. I mean, they did care, but like it wasn't like a big deal, which.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, there were people that
would. So to be 20 and pregnant in college and you're known
by that. And I showed back up. Like I could have just dropped out and quietly like resigned my life, but I was like, no, I'm going to do this. And I don't know how I did it, but like there are people that were friendly with me and, you know, before, and then I would see them afterwards visibly pregnant and they would like literally ignore me, like as if, you know, and I know that sounds really childish, but like you're already feeling like I don't belong here because, you know, I'm carrying a baby and I'm not supposed to be, and everyone knows I'm not married, you know. Right. I'm living with my roommates here.
So do you think that was just, were these people like that you went to like the revivals with and you did these things with, so you felt like they were supposed to be like true friends in a sense?
But I think because I grew up in church and I was like a very, I think being like an empathetic person, you can tell when someone's genuine or not. And so I was used to at this point seeing people in the church be disingenuous, you know? And so I was just like, that's a bummer, you know, but like it hurt to feel rejected and be surrounded by that, but I knew it wasn't reality. Mm-hmm. It just sucked to be around it for as long as I did. So I was there for like 3 months during the first trimester or so. The first semester of my senior year. And then I was supposed to have Baden come back and live on campus and finish out my second semester. And I remember thinking like, this is going to work. It's going to be fine. I don't even know why people around me were like, yeah, it's going to work. And then finally got to the point where like, realized it wasn't going to work. And I also just like, did not want to do that. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to do that at all. So that's whenever I talked to all of my professors for that coming semester and worked it out where I was able to like do those courses from home, and which, you know, like now you're thinking like that's literally the only way people went to college a couple years ago, you know, during COVID. But then it wasn't something that we did. I mean, we had some online classes, but it was very rare. So it worked out and I was able to have Baden at home and then stay home. And we had what we called J term. So during January, most Christian colleges will do this. They have their own term during January so you can graduate early if you wanted to, or you could just take off and have like a very long Christmas break. So I did that. I think I might have taken one class during, I did actually take one class during J term. I started Spanish at a local school that I was able to transfer the credits for. And it was like literally the week after I'd had Baden. So after I gave birth, went to class, which not a big deal. Women literally go back to work, you know, a week after having the baby. But I just remember it being so hard and literally like not knowing that I needed nursing pads and like leaking milk all over the table in front of me. Just like, well, that's embarrassing, you know? So yeah, it ended up all being fine. You know, it was just, I think it was all, I was in such a like this is all happening to me. And I really feel like that's when God kind of took over and orchestrated what he did, because I very easily could have just dropped out. And then like, you know, Zared worked at a Starbucks for the summer to like help us start saving money, but then had to go back to school because it's no use both of us not having a degree if I were going to do that. And so that could have been what our life was, just like him working and me staying home and us living off of this one income and me getting lost, basically, because that's what I did for a minute in the stay-at-home mom world. And I feel like just the way that my parents had always prayed over me and all the things that, you know, some would say I was indoctrinated with, because it was so heavy on the spiritual aspect and the relationship with God part, I was able to lean in on him during that time to be able to actually create this life out of something that most people around me were saying, well, this is, your life's basically over. Now you've chosen to basically just be a mom, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's good. I love that you said that that's when you really leaned on it, because I was going to ask you, like, where did you feel God throughout the presence of, like, the rejection on campus and, like, the disappointment of letting your parents down? Did you feel him? Like, is that?
Yeah, I mean, almost to, like, a self-righteous degree, because I was like, you know, I feel like I know God now on a level that I didn't before, and obviously on a level that you guys don't, you know, like it just made me very frustrated. I think that's why I get so frustrated by people speaking from privilege when they're not like keeping their privilege in check, because I did get a taste of that. You know, we ended up being on welfare for a while, and like, honestly, I was so happy to be. It was like such a relief, because I was like, I thought, you know, I was going to have to rely on my parents and they can't take that extra expense. And it was such a relief to me to have that resource. And so I think now, like, having that experience and then being where I am now and experiencing life with so many moms, and just because I have to talk to them about their finances whenever we're talking about virtual assistant things, that whenever I hear them talk about how other people view them or say things about them, I'm like, that just like really frustrates me, especially mm-hmm. whenever it's people in the church talking about those women and people, you know, just in your circle that you would never think those things about people in those situations. It's just not Christ-like at all. It's not the God that I know. And I think that's where, like, whenever I said that I look back now and the relationship that I have with God as a little girl was not what I thought that it was then. I really do see God as like my source now, whereas before it was like this guiding light, which I think the church really does talk about, like, you know, use God as your light, like he's your beacon, you know, he's mm-hmm. what's leading you. But I mean, he is if you choose to, but you lead yourself, you mm-hmm. choose where you go. And so you can use him as like a light, yes, where it's like directing your path. But for me, it's been more of like a source. I think God is all around us and he's in us and he created us in our image. So we are divine beings with him. But I think we have to tap into that for it to actually work, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that I was just put into so many situations where that was being used for me. And then I later on was like, okay, I have to take over this and, mm-hmm. and make it work basically.
Yeah. I love that. And I don't know what it is. I may just like mess this all up because I cannot think right now, but when people say like, you're the author of your story mm-hmm. or like, let God be the author. But I can't remember who said this, but it's like, no, we're co-authors. Like mm-hmm. we do this together because yeah. we get free will and we get to make our own choices mm-hmm. and we get to choose if we're going to hear his voice and listen to him or if we're going to go our own way because yeah. that's what we want to do. And so I love that you said that because it's like we get to do that together with him. Mm-hmm. Like we get to choose if he's going to be our guide.
Well, and like I was going to say this during your story, but you were talking about how there were so many points where you would like turn a corner and it was like almost like you were getting farther and farther away from God or you could have mm-hmm. been. But that's the thing is he always meets us mm-hmm. at the end. So like if you turn a corner away from him, he's going to show up at the next one.
Yeah.
So he's never going to leave us. We can just keep choosing to swerve away from him basically. Yeah.
So I want to go into, is there anything else you want to say about that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to go into, because I've got to honestly be like with you almost every single day of my life mm-hmm. the past 3 years.
I know, and I love it.
And I experienced so much life with you and growth with you. And I've watched you grow so much just in the past 3 years also, but I've also gotten to witness you kind of deconstructing your faith, mm-hmm. which I thought was so cool to watch because I've never watched anyone do this. Mm-hmm. It was either you were a non-believer or you were a believer. Those are the mm-hmm. two experiences I've ever had in my life
yeah.
with Christianity and like religion and all of that. So it's been like so cool to watch, but you do it in such a healthy way that it's not like God's not real. Like it's, you're actually like searching mm-hmm. for answers. And like when you hear something, you really think about it and mm-hmm. it's taught me so much. Is there something that in the past 3 years that you feel like I really learned this or I really liked doing this mm-hmm. or why did you do this?
Yeah. I think that because of the way that I grew up and because my parents were always deconstructing, I saw them deconstruct everything without doubting God's existence. And I think it's a sense of, you know, not doubting God's existence, just doubting of how the world and everyone around you has been interpreting God and his role in your life and how things play out. And so I was very accustomed to that. And I think I was able to separate that for a long time that, okay, there are people and how they view God and what they say that our life should be like because God exists. And then there's God. Like he already exists. We know that. I know his character is based in love and grace. Mm-hmm. Like that's the core. And yes, there's justice too. But again, that's interpreted by humans who are very erred. And so I just didn't rely on everything that everyone was saying. But I think that the most empowering, I think, thing that I've learned in the past few years is how people are manipulative, and I think they do it without meaning to. And so groups of people, I believe, have taken core beliefs of Christianity and the Bible and you, in the name of love, used it to promote these ideas that Christians as a whole should believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that I've explored some of those things, the more I've realized how unchristian they actually are. And it's embarrassing because, like, looking back at my college years, there were things that I did and participated in and said and probably even posted on social media that in my mind, I'm thinking, this is love. Like, I'm standing for what love would be, what God would stand for. Even, like, knowing, okay, this might hurt some people, but it's in love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then now, like, looking at it and seeing how wrong that that is. And I don't think that the, like, true sin really comes until you are self-aware of that and still continue to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people who never take a break from their privilege, and so they're always seeing through that film. And that's what I think is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're presented with this other perspective of life, then you should put yourself in those shoes and mm-hmm. look at it through that film
mm-hmm.
and then make your decision. And I think a lot of people just choose not to do that.
I love that you said that, because that is something I remember used to telling my father-in-law, that I would always say, I don't care how rich I get or how mm-hmm. far I get away from the life that I used to live. I hope I never forget what it felt like to be in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that so many of us do, or either A, you never mm-hmm. had a situation like that. So
yeah.
you never can put yourself into mm-hmm. that, and people don't try to put themselves
yeah.
in that. But I think that's something, like, we have to remember, and, like, that's something I hope I never forget what it felt like to
mm-hmm.
to be in, like, all the different shoes that I've got to be in.
Yeah. And I think for some people, especially in the church, there is no looking at someone else and telling them what their life should look like. It's only your own life and how you are treating other people. You know, privilege might say, well, you chose to put yourself in that situation, instead of, you know, looking at it and saying, you knew nothing more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you knew to be normal and true. And if
yeah.
anything, it would have been out of nature for you to make a different decision, because
yeah.
no one was around you giving you that power.
And those were the exact things that
yeah.
I've been was told.
And I think that's where the church becomes incredibly toxic and steers people away from it, because we want to say, well, she should have made better decisions, because if it's not her fault that she made those decisions, then I did nothing to deserve where I am now, and I deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's just privilege. You don't deserve it. It's just your privilege to be put in that situation.
Yeah. So is there any, like, piece of advice you would like to give anyone about your testimony or anything that's, like, your journey that you've been through?
Yeah. I think if you grew up in church, or even if you feel, like, really solid in your relationship with God, or, like, the things that you believe in, and unfortunately, like, a lot of the things Christians we believe in have crossed over into, like, political issues. And so a lot of those, like, what you believe anymore does not just affect you. It affects everybody around you. It affects life. And it's so important to dissect it more than I think that we do. Just because you grew up with a certain belief, or you're surrounded by people who believe the same as you, does not mean that what you believe is right or true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should always be on a journey to basically trying to provide proof that what you believe is the best thing. And I think that God created a world that is always changing and evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be evolving with it. And he's always providing new information that we should take into consideration, like, when we're making those decisions.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the Call Us When We podcast.
If you want to spend more time with us, make sure to hit follow. And if you like the episode, share with a friend and leave a review.